This is tape number 5. It is session number 3 with Mr. Fred Miller. The interview is being conducted on Wednesday, December 15th, 1993, at Fred Miller's office in the Portland General Corporation offices in Portland, Oregon. The interviewer is Pat Kohlmeier. Okay. Well, when we finished the last time, Fred, we were talking some about the nuclear power issues and the thoughts of building more nuclear power plants. So I just wanted to pick up there a little bit about Pebble Springs because I did a little more research on that. Did the Department of Energy have an opinion about Pebble Springs, or?
There wasn't an official opinion, and I had no particular strong feelings about nuclear power, but there was a feeling on energy demand forecasts, and the utilities generally were saying that electricity demand would increase at 6% per year, which represented a huge increase as you compound that and look at need for power, so that there are a number of nuclear plants around the region planned, and Pebble Springs obviously is one of them in Oregon.
So I was reading, though, that when all the approval things were coming in about Pebble Springs and the siting plans and everything, that Lon Topaz, your predecessor, had petitioned to be heard to testify about that.
Topaz did have some feelings about nuclear power. And it's interesting, there were two or three kinds of reactions on nuclear power. One is there were some who just didn't like nuclear, forgetting about the energy demand. Some people very concerned about spent fuel, and then some people concerned about demand for electricity and where the plants needed on an economic basis. And those people who were proponents of the plant tended to lump all the anti-nuclears together. Frankly, I'm not quite sure where Topaz came from. I think he probably didn't like it from an energy demand point of view, but I don't think he liked it from the other two perspectives either.
Right. I do think, at least he publicly tried to say, Topaz said he was not an anti-nuclear person, but said the economics is very marginal and the technology extremely complex. So those comments about the extremely complex.
I'm not quite sure what he means by that on technology. That translates maybe to the safety question, and that's one of the reasons that some anti-nuclear people hold that position.
Right. Whatever happened about him and the Pebble Springs?
Once he left the department, he wasn't involved. Mm-hmm. But he had hired some staff members that were perceived as anti-nuclear. Dick Tim, who is our energy demand person or in charge of the forecasting and the economists within the department, was characterized as anti-nuclear. Dick, and I did not want us to be taking a position, but Dick in conversations with me really focused on the economics, which I thought was a legitimate point. He may have had some other feelings too, but he didn't express them to me.
Okay. One of the agencies that they talk about a lot in these articles is the Energy Facility Siting Council.
Right.
What was that?
The Department of Energy was formed by pulling together three or four different small entities, and one was the Nuclear and Thermal Energy Council. And when the department was formed, the Energy Facility Siting Council was created, and it had a peculiar relationship. It was within the Department of Energy in some sense. That is, we provided the staffing for them, but it was an independent group like a transportation commission or other kind of commission. So we provided the staff. The staff essentially worked for me as director of the energy department. But then nevertheless, they were citizens charged with certain responsibilities by the statute.
So when we talked in the transportation department about the transportation commission and its relationship to the Department of Transportation, this energy siting council has a different relationship then to the energy department.
Different relationship. Boards and commissions come in lots of different flavors, and the Transportation Commission was a policy-making body over the department. The siting council was a policy-making group maybe beside the department. They didn't give me instructions, and in fact I instructed the staff. So at some stage of the hearings they found this a little awkward as we had contested case hearings.
Well, the director of that was W. Kelly Woods at that point. Coordinator.
Right. And the coordinator, Kelly Woods, and worked for Topaz and then after that for
okay.
me.
Okay. And did he have a view of the nuclear energy? Or?
He tended to be pro-nuclear.
Okay. I found it one place. Remember, we wondered what Topaz did when he left the Department of Energy. In one article, it said that when he was now unemployed, this is written in August of 77, mm-hmm. which was about a year, about 9 months, 10 months
right.
after he left. And he left a job with the State Public Utility Commission staff last spring. So I wonder if that's where he went for a while.
I think he must have done that for a while because that's where he came from, and I think he had some rights mm-hmm. to return to that position. But that was going to be a smaller job than he wanted, I'm mm-hmm. sure.
And then it said that he was late submitting a petition about the development of Pebble Springs because he had been in Europe, so mm-hmm. perhaps he
okay.
went. Another name that cropped up in these articles, it was Lloyd Marbette, and that opened up to me the whole field of the activists against the nuclear power. How active were they back in the
active
late
Lloyd
70s?
Lloyd before I came to the department was as conversant with the issue. Lloyd was the one who got the Pebble Springs decision. I think there was a decision to go ahead with the plant mm-hmm. at one stage by the siting council. He protested that. Ultimately, the Supreme Court upheld Marbette, and they remanded the decision. They sent it back to the siting council, told the siting council to develop new rules. They said the rulemaking was inadequate. And so one of my charges then was to develop new rules and a process for the Pebble Springs case. So Marbette was active certainly a year or two before I got there, maybe more than that. And obviously was successful in Pebble Springs.
Were there other activists at that time?
Yes, and I can't remember all of them. And at that time, when Lloyd was first involved, before I was there, I don't know who else was involved. There started to be some other people, some of whom are still around, involved in the environmental issues and nuclear issues.
So that Marbette was so prominent in the fight against Trojan that's the way I've seen his name, and so I realized that's 16 years
right,
later.
Right, so I suspect he's been in that field for 20 years, and if mm-hmm. you think about going prior on Pebble mm-hmm. Springs, that had to be, he had to start an involvement in 73, and I'm not sure when Trojan was first cited, whether he was involved, I can't recall that.
And I wondered if at this time that the arguments are coming in about Pebble Springs, are there arguments also about Trojan at that point in time?
There was interest in, because the siting council and then the director of the Energy Department had some responsibility for regulating the plant. And this was a problem for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, who thought they should have sole jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. But when our statute was set up, it gave the director of the Department of Energy really the responsibility to close the plant if mm-hmm. there were, I forget what the words, how it's stated, but if there were a dangerous situation or an uncertain situation, the director could order it closed. And the siting council had responsible for security and other things at the plant. So we certainly had some involvement, as when those issues would come before the siting council at a monthly meeting, Lloyd frequently would be there to testify and express his interest.
Were there questions about the safety of Trojan back then?
Oh, there are always questions about mm-hmm. safety in nuclear plant, and I think Lloyd saw more of them than PGE certainly thought were justified, or that I thought were justified.
Or the studies that have been made at times about Trojan and the design, were those questions already prominent, or?
There were questions raised, lots of times without lots of merit. It's an amazing thing on Trojan when, just in terms of safety and the precautions, tremendous amount of process and security out there. And when the plant was constructed, I can remember the board, I've been told that since, the board of directors for PGE balked because the number of employees was going to go up over 100 to operate the plant. And when we closed the plant, we now meaning with PGE, when we closed the plant in January of this year, there were 1,300 employees. And there were 225 security employees, whereas originally it was going to take 100 to operate the whole plant. So the various concerns and pressures and paperwork really added to a lot of people.
Now, a famous nuclear plant out in the Northwest was the Whoops system plant. Is this in the 70s? Is this the same time frame as Whoops?
This is when the Whoops plants were going through the process of establishing their need, and in some sense, I can't remember the time frame of the construction of all the units. I think of the four units, one was started and a couple of them were going through siting process, and these two were being justified based on the same energy demand forecasts
that the utilities companies had.
Right.
Or did the state of Washington also make energy forecasts?
The state of Washington didn't have an energy department nearly as soon as state of Oregon, and when they did, it wasn't an energy demand forecasting operation. And the governor in the state of Washington at that time was Dixie Lee Ray, who was a pro-nuclear person. So when I dealt with the state of Washington energy department, they generally were saying, why are you making this noise?
So that they, within their government, they didn't have the same voice of caution that the Department of Energy in Oregon proved to be.
No, the Department of Energy was a thorn at that time with that forecast.
But in the long run...
Well, I think I said facetiously here that probably by doing the forecasting and going through that process, I've saved PGE and probably some others more money than I ever will as an employee.
Do you think that without the forecast that the Department of Energy made, Oregon could have been headed in the same direction as the Whoops problems in Washington?
Well, I'm not sure how to characterize the same direction. We could have launched into siting the plant, and that would have been tremendously expensive, and then I think we would have found ourselves with a plant and we wouldn't have needed the energy. And who knows how it would have operated. I mean, the Trojan plant obviously had some operational difficulties. I don't know how well Pebble Springs would have operated.
Bonneville Power Authority had some involvement with Whoops, too. And I'm trying to figure out how, if there was an effect from Whoops on the Oregon, if that's one way, because Bonneville still has financial responsibilities.
And I couldn't, at this stage, lay out all of the implications. The Northwest is so tied together with respect to electricity, and Bonneville being a key player in terms of transmission of the electricity or generation of the power, all of us are impacted. And when a plant closes down, for example, it has an impact on energy prices for all of us. So obviously, Bonneville's involvement with Whoops has a real impact on us. But they also, Bonneville also was starting to get concerned about energy demand forecasts. And I remember I dealt with them, and Mike Katz, who was a Bonneville economist, had a special study related to energy demand and came up with some conclusions that weren't exactly like ours, but were not too far off.
Right. In fact, I had here, that was a name that, it said that Katz, in fact, Straub, that I was going to talk about Governor Straub next. He says that this is what Straub says, we're doing additional research to see whether there's some way I can find additional time to approve or, you know, whether to assign this delay to Pebble Springs. He says, reliable audit of how much power, okay, because as far as I'm aware, the only comprehensive, reliable audit of how much power the state of Oregon will need in the future is being done by Mike Katz. Mm-hmm. Katz heads a subcommittee of the Pacific Northwest Regional Commission. Now, is that, how does that fit in with, was that a part of Bonneville or?
No, he took leave from Bonneville to do a separate study and to head up that study. And Mike's a good researcher and very thorough person. So he was doing that study. It's interesting, I remember that article now that you mention it. And that's been a long time, but that bothered the people in the Energy Department. Because Katz and Straub were close, as was Janet McLennan, who was Straub's natural resources advisor. She's the one I worked most closely with. So we all knew each other pretty well, but Katz and McLennan and Straub were pretty good friends. So when I think Mike had talked to the governor about, be sure you know what you're doing on energy demand. So when the governor said that's the reliable study, did that mean our study at energy wasn't reliable? That's what some of the people were thinking. Really, that it wasn't a big deal. I can understand how Straub would say that, and we dealt pretty directly with Katz. So when he came down with his study that said, I don't know what it was, energy, he had three scenarios, a low, medium, and high. But his medium or best case or most accurate scenario really had power or energy, electricity demand increasing something like 2% or 1.8%, which again was well less than the 6%. And the real impact was, it looks to the objective forecasters if the demand for power is much lower than the utilities were saying.
I had the same reaction when I saw that, him giving Katz a lot of credit, and I thought, well, the Department of Energy is doing research too and making forecasting. And this leads me then to some discussion of what Straub's view was of this whole deal.
I don't know if he started with any strong feelings. He and I didn't deal a lot with Straub. I dealt a lot more with Janet McLennan. And I did go to Straub's staff meetings. Anyway, we can talk a little bit about that, but I really, as I say, had much more to do with Janet. Straub, I'm sure, by that article and by Katz's dealings, would listen to Mike, listen to Janet, and he'd listen to me, but again, to a lesser extent, or a little less exposure. But I remember the thing that's I'm chuckling about and it's coming to mind is we had him set up to give a major talk to essentially an environmental audience. And there were hundreds of people there. And for whatever reason in his speech, his speechwriter had written that nuclear power was really the transition source of energy to get us from where we were to where we needed to be. And he got booed by the audience. And it was a very unusual to hear a governor booed. And I don't know if he really believed that or if the writer wrote it and he didn't spend enough time with it. But he was a good business person, and he might have said from an economic point of view or just from an energy point of view, that's better than fossil fuels. Recall at that time we had some real petroleum shortage scares, and he might have said that's the best way to go. And actually, Trojan was cited as the alternative. I just learned this yesterday. One alternative was the High Mountain Sheep Dam that was a big Snake River project. And an environmental group said, we'll support Trojan if you don't build that dam. That was seen as an environmental decision. And the power source, if it wouldn't have been nuclear, would have been oil generation, which is certainly an expensive and sort of dirty way to generate electricity. So dirty meaning air quality. So nuclear was seen as a more environmentally benign approach in terms of, as it compared to both the dam and the oil fire generation. Obviously things change in terms of perspective.
Janet McLennan, how would her view have been?
She would I'm sure, try and remain objective on these things. She was a good attorney and very concerned about natural resources.
So. And so your relationship with her was a good working relationship?
Mm-hmm, very good.
And did Straub seem to, his attitude towards energy conservation and natural resources was supportive, or?
It was supportive. He was a little hard to read. Just his style was a little bit hard to read on where he really felt passionate. And he would say the right thing on energy resources and be supportive. But it wasn't a cause that he was championing. He was not a champion. And I'll tell this is great history. I can remember one comment he was making because people were talking about Straub being a bumpkin. And he was, if I'm not mistaken, a Dartmouth grad and a smart guy, had good business sense and good judgment. But nevertheless, his style made him look like he was bumbling sometimes. And he was going on about, why are people calling him a bumpkin? And ends up, they sounds like they just want to put him in a bumpkin patch. And he was just sort of venting to a staff meeting one time. Well, sometimes that style wouldn't quite let you know where he stood on things. So you could read the words, and I remember him doing a speech one time in the car. I was riding with a speech writer and with him, and I can't remember where he was going, but he was sort of practicing and reading the speech as he had to, and at the right moment he was hitting his fist on the dashboard and said, I believe this, and then he turned to the speech writer and said, why do I believe that? But that's not unusual. I mean, governors go through that. It was just a human side of it. But he could come across as not necessarily decisive on some things. And other things, he'd plant his feet.
He went to a, I think it was a governor's conference, and it was reported that he had an idea for an energy. He went to the National Governors Conference, and he had the germ of an idea for encouraging energy conservation. And his idea, what was it, wait a minute, was to, had to do with some more about allocation. Okay, wait, where was it? It's sort of a federal energy bank. That's what they called it, where he said it wasn't to a state's interest to conserve if their conserving just meant that the energy could be used by another state, but that if a state conserved, they could sort of bank it in a way that when they may need some more later, they could draw from their reserve.
Recall that.
No.
What was the date on that?
That was 75, okay. So it was before you. Yeah. Nothing ever came of that.
No.
And I didn't know if that was a whim of an idea he had that never, he wasn't really dedicated to, or if it met a lot of opposition.
I just can't recall that. And frankly, I'm not quite sure how to do it. Maybe that's why it suffered. When you say energy, it all of a sudden it gets complicated when you say, are you talking about petroleum or natural gas? And let's take natural gas, which we haven't talked much about. How do you bank that? Mm-hmm. If the supply is from out of state, where is the bank and what are your rights as a state? And again, the Northwest is so interconnected. What we do does impact Washington and vice versa. And you try to look at things regionally, and this looked more like a state approach.
Yes, this was definitely a state approach, it seemed. The governors did issue a statement, and with all of our talk about forecasting, it said, the statement, Straub says, the statement that they issued was kind of a waffle, he called it, but the article says, but it was apparently was the strongest position governors could get past the confusing crossfire of energy forecasts and formulas and partisan politics. Mm-hmm. So that a lot of states were having troubles with the forecasting. Do they still do forecasts?
Yes.
Periodically? Is it, how often does it get done?
I think it's every 2 years now.
And are people more...
There's lots more unanimity now on forecasts.
And why do you think that is?
Well, for one, utilities got way overextended. To put $1 billion into a plant that you really don't need is a real problem. And I think we're as an industry, still regulated, but people are very much worried about being competitive and not making expenditures that aren't justified. So I think there's just a little bit more incentive to do it right from the utility point of view.
And so now the disparity between them doesn't come up quite as
right,
much as...
Right.
All right. Great. Now, another agency or council that was the Pacific Northwest Energy Commission. I saw that one referred in the...
That as a name surprises me. There used to be a regional commission, and then there was a Northwest... The Power Council.
I'm trying to see if I could find where... And I might... Because there were so many different commissions.
It could have been lost on the commission, and I think you raised that with.
Well, this was
the Mike Katz.
The Mike Katz Pacific Northwest Regional Commission, and I might have written down energy.
There was a regional commission.
I
don't think that exists any longer, but the governors used to have representatives on that commission, and they essentially funneled federal money into particular causes for grants.
Today there's the Northwest Power Planning Council.
Right.
How does that fit into all of these types of commissions?
You almost have to look at the stat. That came out of the power bill,
right.
And that was, early 80s?
Right.
Yeah. And it fits with certain planning responsibilities, and they have both power and fish authority and responsibilities, two members from each of four Northwest states. But how much they can really say to Bonneville, here's what you have to do, we watch that play out, how much they can really say to utilities, here's what your decisions have to be, is unclear. They do some planning, and there's a context for decisions, but... a lot of that is a matter of how persuasive they can be rather than authority over the decision makers.
So it's not necessarily that some of these Oregon commissions funneled into and became, were replaced by the Northwest.
No, but I don't know that there were many Oregon commissions. I mean, that regional council was regional. It wasn't just Oregon. And when you think about Oregon commissions, there really wasn't any.
Okay.
I mean, we still have a PUC and still have a siting council.
All right, and then the Facility Siting Commission is still in existence.
That still exists.
Okay. All right. Now, the whole question of public utilities began gaining real prominence in the end of the 70s, too. And I'm trying to... Well, one of the articles... when after Straub left, made the comment that one of the things that marks his administration was his regional energy or his regional power agenda. So I figured that whole idea, now when that was regional, are they then referring to the Northwest region or were they referring to
within
the state?
He was involved in that, but let me come at that in a little bit different way. Roy Hemingway was a key player here, and he was Charlie Davis's deputy, also a very good friend of Janet McLennan, as was Charlie Davis. I mean, there was some of us who knew each other pretty well, and I guess they knew each other pretty well, and I came along and got to know them. But Roy was a talented attorney and responsible for drafting and getting through the Oregon legislature lots of bills related to energy conservation and renewable resources. Then he became involved in the power bill. The regional power council emerged from that. Well, he was very involved in Oregon and in Washington, D.C. on that. There was an idea, because people were very concerned about utility rates.